So, okay. Then? 80. When by the disposition of his heart, he becomes indifferent to all objects, he obtains eternal happiness both in this world and after death. He who has in this manner gradually given up all attachments and is free from all the pairs of opposites reposes in Brahman alone. So someone who wants to get very serious about devotional service then has to be able to, or has to practice this aspect, that one is indifferent to all the different objects. So now, generally, when we think of indifference, which has been practiced in the past, like we see that, you know, the brahmacharis will be indifferent to the ladies, or devotees will be indifferent to their families, or you know, different situations like this, then we actually see it's not indifference. It's actually we're not attracted, so we dislike, like that. So it goes the opposite. It's actually we hate, but not on a necessarily a very very organized fashion or something, but it's the opposite. Indifferent means there's no attraction, there's no repulsion. So it's just a matter of if it's favorable to use in Krishna service or has something to do with Krishna service, then we deal with it. And if we don't, then we don't deal with it. Like that. That's the point. So then that is the position that one is dealing with. It's just one sees something, and one sees it in relationship to Krishna. And then if it's one's position to engage it, then one does. And if it's not, then one doesn't. In other words, what will be useful for one's service and for the pleasure of the Lord. So it says here, in this matter, gradually giving up all attachments. So this is a practice, it's sadhana. One has to work at this. One has to understand this and then gradually work for this. It says, then he is able to reposes in Brahman alone. So only that person can actually come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And only that person then can actually come to the, you know, go beyond the Brahma-Bhuta platform to the platform of prema. Because if there's any attachment or aversion in the world, then one will get stuck in the world. One will not be able to situate oneself on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And without that, then one can't cross into the spiritual platform. I mean, one's on the transcendental platform, but on the actual platform personal reality. Where one moves into the realm of service to the Lord. And otherwise, one will just be in the brink, the tathasta point. It means we've come from there, and the difference is we've fallen from there from not knowing the glories of prema bhakti. Because we did not have any natural attraction for Krishna, then, I mean, we have it, but we didn't take advantage of it. Therefore, because the position is choice is there, no one's going to be forced. Right? So then one doesn't know, one makes one's choice. And because we're not having that natural attraction, I mean, not exercising any natural attraction for Krishna, then that means that there is, it's not aversion.
Indifference
to Krishna. So indifference automatically then turns into impersonalism. So that from that platform, then we become attracted by Maya. And then Maya then brings us into this world. So the whole process of devotional service, why there must be conscious, that's why it said Krishna consciousness. It means sometimes devotees, which is true in the beginning, if we just chant, we just take prasad, we're just with devotees, that's good enough. Because from that one will get purified and one will hear. And one will see good example. But at some point, one actually has to become Krishna conscious. That's what the society is made for. That's why it's named Krishna consciousness. It says, for Krishna consciousness. International Society for Krishna consciousness means that we're supposed to develop Krishna consciousness. So that means consciousness means conscious. So that means we have to know that we have a goal and we're trying to get to that. And we have to be conscious of that at all times, at all places. Then, when one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, then one will not be stuck on the platform of indifference. One is indifferent to the material world, but one will not be indifferent to Krishna. See, the problem is tatastha means we're indifferent to the material world, we're indifferent to Krishna. But that indifference to Krishna creates impersonalism, which naturally then creates attraction to the material world. So this indifference is only useful in relationship to the material world. That's why the whole process, this whole process that the ascetic uses, this process of jnana, is only to get one to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. Beyond that, it has no meaning, it has no purpose. It's done, right? Just like you have a knife. A knife is there, you cut the vegetable. Once you're done, you don't use it to stir the sabji and then serve it and then eat everything and then wash the pots with it and then clean the counter. No, it has its purpose, it's finished. You cut the vegetables, now you actually get into cooking. And when you get into cooking, it has nothing to do with the knife. So this whole process of becoming indifferent to all objects, that is for the purpose of coming to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. There's no other purpose. Once one gets to that platform, then this process of jnana has no purpose. It's done its purpose. It's happened. So then one takes up one, because one has been trained to know that love for Krishna is the goal that we're trying to obtain. Then we will go beyond that platform. Right? For on the platform of indifference, we may not go. If we see something, we become attracted to it, then we'll go the path of the acharyas. You know, we see the great acharyas, that they are serving the parshads, they're serving the Lord. And we see that, and we're attracted to that, and then this way we become attracted to Krishna, then we'll go that path. But if we just see so many things going on, we're in the pure state, we're not attracted, but we're not attracted to the material world either, one can't remain in that tatastha state, you know, very long. It's just not a state one can maintain. So then, from there, because the Brahman platform can't be maintained, right? So from there, one falls. So that's the whole idea is it's used as a mechanics to get one to that platform. But once one gets to that platform, then one has to know what the goal is and go beyond it. So it's just a stage in one's going, a momentary stage. That one has come now, there's no attraction in the material world, one has come to that. And then from there, one has gone on. Then from there, one goes on, like that. So this is the platform that one has been here. So this language here reposes in Brahman alone, means we understand it means when it comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, but the whole idea is one is going to go to the Supreme Brahman. So reposing in Brahman alone means is only if we're in Krishna. You can't just repose in only the Brahman alone, because that platform didn't work for us in the beginning. It's not going to work for us now, right? Like that, it doesn't work for anybody. One has to understand that this Brahman means the Supreme Brahman. 82. Okay. All that has been declared above depends on meditation. For he who is not proficient in the knowledge of that which refers to the soul reaps not the full reward of the performance of rites. So now this means everything that's been discussed before. We could take it meaning in the discussion with, in discussion meaning with just what has been discussed just immediately. Means this ascetic attaining to the perfectional platform, and just in the last few verses, it can be discussing the whole life of the ascetic, or it can be meaning everything that's been discussed before. Right? So we understand. So for most, they'll take just the aspect of this attaining perfection. Or possibly they will take the whole process of the life of a sannyas. But it means actually all the varnas, all the ashrams, everything that's been described before. Because that is daivavarnashram, is that you understand what is the position. In other words, the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes it, you have the hamsa. Hamsa means they understand they're not the body. And they understand that there is a, you know, the higher goal purposes in life. right? They're not interested in the material nature. But now, in that, we find that we have two bodies, the subtle and the gross, and those have to be engaged. So therefore, we see the nature of those bodies and engage them in the Lord's service. Right? So in other words, the Hamsa is the one who is actually performing properly the devotion, these activities of varna and ashram. Right? So the Hamsas come in two varieties. One that where they're detached from the material nature, one where they have the knowledge of detachment, but they haven't got the full realization. So then they follow the rules of the Grihastha Dharma and all this, and perform their activities there. But there's no interest actually in sense gratification. So all this actually replies before that, because otherwise you can't actually follow all these other things properly, unless you understand the knowledge of the soul. Like that. So the full reward of any rite is understood when we understand what is the soul. Who is the Lord? Who are we? What is the material nature? What is that relationship? Then you actually get the full benefit. And the full benefit means it detaches us from the material nature and attaches us to Krishna. That is the real benefit. 83. Let him constantly recite those texts of the Veda which refer to the sacrifice, those referring to the deities, and those which treat of the soul and are contained in the concluding proportions of the Veda, in other words, Vedanta. So, another one must always be thinking of and discussing the scriptures in relationship to what is proper activity, in relationship to the Lord, and all the different how he acts in the whole creation and the whole cause, you know, the whole material world and the whole spiritual world. Then ourselves as the soul, as servant of the Lord, what is our position, our relation, how we're not connected with the material world, and then the concluding portions of the Veda, which is the Vedanta, in other words, the philosophy. So in other words, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, thinking of the Lord himself, thinking of us as his servant, and what are proper duties, what are our duties to be done, you know, sacrifice. In other words, the preaching mission and the different activities of sadhana and varnashram that apply to us. So that should be the constant discussion of the sannyasi. But here it's mentioning also is that we can understand someone who wants to go back to Godhead. This is for anybody. 84. That is the refuge of the ignorant, and even that the refuge of those who know the meaning of the Veda. That is the protection of those who seek bliss in heaven and of those who seek endless beatitude. Okay. So these discussions, even for the ignorant, this is the proper thing for them to be. This is what they should hear about. This is their refuge. They think it's something else, but it's this. You know, discussions about the Lord, his expansions, his activities in the spiritual and material worlds. The position of the soul. How he's not part of this material nature and he's a servant of Krishna, and the proper performance of sacrifice. So for the ignorant, then those who know the meaning of the Veda, this is their refuge. Then it is the protection of those who are interested to go to heaven, right? And for those who seek endless beatitude, then which would normally be thought of as the jnanis, but endless means can only mean the devotees. So, in other words, this is topics for everybody. The ascetic, that should be the main discussions, but these are also the should be the main discussions for everybody else. But until they get to that platform, then they may discuss more on the sacrifice or more on other aspects. But the purpose is to come to this platform of discussing these things, where one is always discussing the philosophy, the Lord, ourselves and its practical application. Right? The philosophy has to be practically applied. In that application, there's the Lord and ourself and the material nature. So we have to know how to apply that. So then you finished your rounds? So then one must discuss these things, how we apply it. Understanding the Lord and ourself as His servant, then we learn that through the philosophy. Now we have to apply that. So that's sacrifice. So that's the whole culture. That's the whole etiquette. That's whole the whole devotional process. So these things are everybody should be discussing. 85. A twice-born man who becomes an ascetic after the successive performance of the above-mentioned acts shakes off sin here below, and reaches the highest Brahman. Oh, I see. Okay. Thus, the law valid for self-restrained ascetics has been explained to you. Now listen to the particular duties of those who give up the rites prescribed by the Vedas. The student, 87. The student, the householder, the hermit, and the ascetic, in other words, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. These constitute four separate orders, which all spring from the order of householders. But all or even any of these orders, assumed successively in accordance with the institutes of the sacred law, lead to the Brahman, who acts by the preceding rules to the highest state. Yeah, so in other words, it's springing from the householder. That's why generally most all the different rules are explained in the householder ashram. But that doesn't mean that they're not followed. Certain things aren't followed by everyone. It means the grihastha specifically, the maintenance of his house, the dealing with the women of the house or the wife, his keeping of money, and so many rights that go because he feels he owns the house and has these different facilities, then those are specifically for the grihastha. But otherwise, all the other things, the cleanliness, dealing with guests, all these different things like this, that's for everybody. The Vedic literatures are very, sometimes they're very much considered contradictory by most academics. But actually, they're the most systematic, and they don't waste time discussing something that they don't need to discuss. Like we see here, as we've gone through now, we'll have gone through here, we're just almost finished with this, the whole section on varnas, is they've described this very systematically, going from what is the Lord's creation, down to Brahma's creation, down to how that has to do with the rules and regulations of what is right and wrong. Then they've described the time element, which is essential for understanding action. Then they've described what is the place of those who are by nature going to follow this culture given by the Lord. Then it explains that someone born in that place would be born according to the proper samskars. Then it goes one by one through the samskars, and in this way comes through up until now the ascetic. So it's been very systematic. And in that, it doesn't describe anything anywhere that it comes out at that point. That's the main place where it's used, but it'll be used by everybody. Right? Just like here, we're describing the ascetic. Ascetic is for the purpose of going to the higher realms. I should be going back to Godhead, but at least, you know, they're trying for Brahman or some higher understanding yoga practice like this. So now, the whole point is everyone in all four levels of ashram should be interested in Brahman. So all these rules apply to them. Right? If you want to be very serious about going back to Godhead, you have to be a little bit careful about not, you know, killing living entities and squashing them and just being completely unnoticing what's going on. But there may be, one is distracted by so many things. The how you say, one, in youth, there's so much, frivolous sports, and just one gets bewildered by that. The grihastha ashram, all the things that are happening there, and all the duties and all the responsibilities, one gets sidetracked and one doesn't actually see where one's walking. Right? It means whatever one is thinking is superimposed on everything. Yes?
You mentioned that you pointed the other day in Bhagavatam class, and I didn't get a chance to ask. sometimes devotees, you know, these mosquitoes, they'll squack them and they say, well, I know the story of Prabhupada when he flicked one accidentally or something and he, Hari Sari, he watched it land and he was asking, did it die? Mm-hmm. It was very much an anxiety. But then sometimes devotees say that, well, just like with scorpions and spiders and stuff, they're poisonous, so we should kill them. So you kill them before they kill you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What is the proper, what would be your opinion on that as far as whacking mosquitoes around?
Well, generally one just tries to create the situation that they don't, how do you say?
Bite you.
Yeah, don't bite you.
Mosquito coils and...
Yeah, yeah, and different things like that.
Mosquito nets.
Yeah, yeah. Generally like that. I mean, I think there was one place where Prabhupada mentioned they're attacking with deadly weapon, you know. You know, so that's the niti. Yeah. But that's the niti shastra. But higher than niti shastra is dharma shastra. So the niti is just, is on the platform of justice. That's why we see here, it means... You're called varnas, or it's just occupational ways. It's the way that you feed yourself, basically. Ashrams are the shelter in which your spiritual advancement is going on. It means you do whatever you do to maintain yourself, then you come back to your ashram, right? You go out and work all day, then you come back to the home. And that's the ashram. The workplace is not the ashram. Like that. The brahmachari goes out and begs and comes back to the ashram where the teacher lives. The vanaprastha goes out in the field and after they've cut the, you know, the grains and they go and pick up something from the field or goes to the market and when the market's closed goes and picks up a few things. Then he comes back to his ashram. You know, so like that. Then the that occupational maintenance of themselves, that is what creates the varna and also the aspects of the ashram. But the ashram is where the spiritual cultivation is going on. Therefore, we see here Namana Samhita, and whenever it's being described, you always see the ashrams are described first, because that has the substance in it. They're more important. Though the where one can situate oneself nicely in the ashrams has something to do with the varna nature. So then, to determine that, one needs to see that also. But the most important of the two is the ashram. That's why we see Prabhupada also, when he established the movement, he established ashram first. And he established it very, you know, strongly. And many times devotees will say Prabhupada didn't establish varnashram. But the most important of it, the Brahmins, you know, and all the four ashrams, that's the most essential aspects. He established management, he established how it should go on, he established businesses. So that's all one has to establish. Means the artists just serve the others, they help the others, like that. So it doesn't need separate establishment. So it's already done, but some will consider that it's not because they don't see a whole economic base going on. And you know, like that. They'll just see the economics of the varnashram system as the important. But actually, the economics is just so that the ashrams can go on. You know, it's just like in a temple. If no one would say, we have this temple, it has nice deity worship, the devotees are there, they're very happy, there's good association going on, good training is going on, but they're not economically very together. So no one would say, oh, we don't have a temple here. You know, because the essence is when a temple has good money and therefore good facilities and everybody's set up very nicely, then that's a good temple. No one would say that. It means the essential thing is the spiritual development. Then with that, naturally, you know, money and other facilities are necessary, but that's secondary. You know, I was just talking with one businessman came yesterday. He's a devotee from the Middle East. Yes, he does big business. He does business there and he comes to India to buy things and he works in a lot of countries there. And he was saying that, you know, in the 2 hours in the morning, he just does his sadhana and everything. And then at the work, he doesn't get it. He has computers and all that. He doesn't get involved in them because he knows they just suck you right in. So he hires people, they deal with all the computers. So he says that he knows other businessmen, they themselves get involved in all these things, and of course they make a bit more money. But in his mind, is, you know, he's already a good businessman's already making, you know, tons more than what he needs, so you don't need to make, a 1,000 tons more than what you need. He's making, 100 tons more than what he needs. That's enough. So he just this is what I do. And I do my sadhana. And then the balanced time, I do my business. And they have nice preaching programs going on. And he was telling me all nice things and about how businessmen deal and their mentalities and all this. And so here's a successful businessman. And he's saying, I don't get that involved because I want to be Krishna conscious. I'm involved enough. I take care of a family easily. And, with eyes closed, I can do that. Then on top of that, then so much is there, then it can be used for different preaching projects and all these kind of things. One doesn't, one only gets involved as much as one needs. And more than that, one kind of avoids. He's a little older, so he mentioned, when someone's young, then they may get overly fired up. But that's, I was talking with another devotee whose proclivity is business, and he's good at it. So it's kind of like, he's making the point, when you're younger, then you have to get things set up. You have to get the home set up and all your facilities and this and that. So you're working more. So all your money, your net from what you do, you generally reinvest in all these things. So there's no profit as such. Everything's just being reinvested and all that. And then, and then you set everything up. But he says, nobody who's a devotee, who's doing business, ever thinks that this is what I'm always going to be doing. They always think at some point, once the business is set up and all the facilities are set up for oneself, because it's hard work, naturally they want to be giving money for the preaching to the temples and all this. He says that's just, it means at least in his experience, himself and any other devotee who does business and is good at generating funds, he says they don't have that. But he says the problem is some devotees who don't understand business and how much work it is think that, if you go out and if in 2 weeks you're not turning in big bucks to the temple, you're in Maya. So he says you have to give some space because it takes time to set up the business and set up everything. But once it's set up, what are you going to do with all the money anyway? And if you're Krishna conscious, you can't go out and buy, 10 Rolls Royce for yourself. You can't do that. You set up what you need for that and your comfortable living. And after that, what money you... Because the nature is you have to make money. You know how to do it. You see an opportunity. You can't not take it. And it's just like, you have a kid and you have a Mangal Arati suite and no one's around. It's like he has to take it. It's like, it's prasad. It's there. So like that, they have to make the money. But then they don't want to keep it for themselves. But they want to give it, and they want to see that it's given nicely. So he was making this point. So the whole idea is that it's an ashram. Therefore, all these things that are the philosophical aspects that the sannyas concentrates on, they're meant for everybody. All the ashrams. Like that. And all the rules on washing your hands and mouth after you eat, and then seeing that others, if you have any dependents that they're taking care of, they get prasad. All these things, they're described in the householder, but that's meant for everybody. Right? So therefore, the householder, it's mentioned at this point here, is that everything's coming out of those rules. Right? All spring from the order of householders. Because what's happening is it springs from it, one, in the material world, because we've been in the material world since time immemorial. And since time immemorial, we've been interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So that's the purification of that naturally comes in the Grihastha Ashram. So you have to get trained properly as a brahmachari, then one can be a good Grihastha. Then, because that's not the ultimate goal, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, therefore then vanaprastha sannyas. And then how far you get? Nice. If not, next life. Then you go again. Then you're a higher level. Then you continue until then you may see that now someone is born, and then like some of the acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, then at 12 he just goes off, or Raghunath Das, he just goes off. They just go like this. But this is, the end of the line. But yeah. But all the rules that are there are described for the householder, but that same culture applies for everybody. The same proper culture applies for everybody. Just like all the rules of study are described for the brahmachari. So that doesn't mean that the grihastha, when he studies, does something different. Right? The brahmachari learns from a teacher, he's submissive, he inquires, he renders service. The grihastha wants to learn, they have the same thing. They have to be submissive, they have to hear, they have to inquire, they have to be doing some service, you know, somewhere for Krishna. Like that, then they'll get realization. It's the same process. But you describe study for with the brahmachari. How to control the senses, study and all that. That's also described again with the vanaprastha nyas. And then all the daily little things and how you eat and how you keep your clothes and do all these different things. That is done with the grihastha. So it's very, I see. The Vedic explanations and are very, very clear. Then it says, all or even any of these orders assumed successively in accordance with the institutes of the sacred law lead to the Brahman, who acts by the preceding rules to the highest state. Lead the Brahmana, who acts by the preceding rules to the highest state. In other words, wherever you start, then if you're using the rules from before, you're acting on those, you'll get to the highest state. So it's when you move to the next, the rule stays, but any of the aspects that it's being done for a lower purpose is given up. Just like you have the Vedic rules, someone follows it for karma. Now when one comes to the platform of jnana, one still follows those, but one drops out the purpose of karma, the fruits of karma, right? Then this becomes nishkam karma. That, and then from there, then one may follow the rules for bhakti. So the same rules are there. Just like you have the rule how you serve prasad. Now, grihastha may be doing it for, relatives or just to keep peace in the between the families or for some other purpose. They invite over some big people, this and that. But when you move to the next level, when that's not the interest, then you're still going to serve prasad in the same way. You're still going to sit down people. You're still going to serve nicely in the same orders and all this. So the one teaching goes on to the next. You just have to know which ones are specifically for what purpose. That's all. But the principles, the foundational principles of each, just they build up on the next because it's a natural development. Study, then application, and then detachment. And then, then the full concentration on spiritual. It says, the Brahmana who acts by the preceding rules to the highest state. In other words, the devotee, they are the actual Brahmanas. Bhaktisiddhanta says, Bhaktisiddhanta makes this point. The only real Brahmanas are the devotees. So this means the devotee who acts according to this, then comes to the highest platform. Like that. But if the devotee doesn't follow, then they can do that in the beginning, but they should understand it'll be very hard to make great advancement. Because it is Krishna's culture. Right? It is Krishna's culture. We may say we don't care, we just absorb ourselves in Krishna. But then at some point, then what are you going to do when you find yourself in the same situation that Krishna himself personally is present? Right? Duryodhana doesn't like to, he is free from following the rules. But unfortunately, he finds himself in the same situation that God is present. And unfortunately, God follows the rules. And therefore, the relationship isn't proper. He can't relate with what God is doing. Right? When God comes to the material world, he follows the rules. Because, and what's going on in the pastimes here are what's going on in the pastimes there. Like we hear in Braja, the only difference between Gokul and Golok is that here you have the demons that Krishna kills, in Golok you don't. And in Gokul you have, the gopis have actual husbands. You can go up and touch them and pinch them and they're there. While in Golok, they're not there. They just feel they have them there. It doesn't say that, they don't, serve prasad in the same way, or, they don't do all these different things like this. That's the culture from there has been reflected here. So in its natural reflection, which is a perversion. The perversion is because we do it for ourselves. We're the enjoyer. But its natural reflection is the pure Vedic culture. It means being done to please the Lord. Then you take that and then you pervert it. So it's a perversion of perversion. Then you get non-Vedic situations. Or you get the more, materialistic, non-devotional sides of the Vedic culture that are not the real purpose of the Vedic culture, Just like it mentions meat-eating. The Vedic culture doesn't support or advocate meat-eating. But if someone's going to be a meat-eater, at least they should follow God's rules on it. But it's not recommended. It's not recommended. So this, one should know that reflection is what's there, and that's what God does. That's what they call it pastimes, right? We may say, well, he's God, he doesn't have to follow. He's God, he doesn't have to follow. But for the pastimes, he does. He does follow, because that's why it's called pastime. It's something to pass the time, And he's doing that with his devotees. You have to have something to do. There has to be some reason to be together with the devotees. Otherwise, they'll just all sit around and just smile at each other. Actually, smiling is an activity. So they'll just all sit around and that knowing look. Everybody's absorbed in Brahman. So like that. It's not... But the pastime is there. So these cultures are there. So therefore, the devotee actually can follow them because he does them for pleasing the Lord. He doesn't do it for pleasing the senses. That's the thing is, most take that the rules and regulations of dharma are for material artha, material kama, and material moksha, like that. But they're not. From dharma, then comes all the facilities for Krishna's service, and then kama, it's Krishna's kama, right? We perform preaching. From preaching, then so much facilities comes. We take all those facilities that come, that artha, and use it in the Lord's service. So he gets the kama. Right? It's him. It's his. He's the recipient of that. So the dharma artha kama, that is for him, not for us. Dharma, we do it for him. The artha then Lakshmi gives because she's happy. And then the kama is the Lord's kama. So that's the actual transcendental process. But in the material world, somehow or another, like they take out the cows. Cows then eat grass. Then they give milk, and they milk the cows and give the milk to Krishna. Like that. 89. And in accordance with the precepts of the Veda and the Smriti, the housekeeper is declared to be superior to all of them, for he supports the other three. As all rivers, both great and small, find a resting place in the ocean, even so men of all orders find protection with householders. By twice-born men belonging to any of these four orders, the tenfold law must be ever carefully obeyed. Yeah. Means is that we see in maintaining the system. See, because we have to understand, in maintaining the system, then the point is it's the householder who does all these different duties, right? The duties of a kshatriya cannot be performed as, they're done as a grihastha. The vaishya, the shudra, this is all being done as the grihastha. So all the economic development, all the maintenance is all coming out of there. Everything's coming out of there. So then everybody else is being, how you say, maintained by the grihasthas. Like that. That is the thing. So in maintenance of the system, that's it. And it's most of the bulk are there. But at the same time, because there are higher purposes to this, therefore those who are detached means you have the brahmacharis who are detached, but they are, how you say, dependent. So they are taken care of by the grihasthas. Out of, how you say, like parental affection. then the vanaprasthas and sannyas, they're detached and they're respected by the grihastha because their purpose is to get to that. So we see, therefore, in the whole system is actually, it's only Krishna is the superior, Krishna, the devotees. And whoever you are, you always consider someone else. Like Krishna, he considers that his devotees are greater than him. Therefore, it's said, what is it? Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnur aradhanam param. Then? Something tasmat paratanam devi, is it? Tadiyanam samarpanam. So, superior to all forms of worship is worship of Vishnu. But superior to that is worship of the devotees. So this is how Krishna considers it. So you'll find here is that it's gone through this and shown how the grihastha respects the sannyasi, the vanaprast, all these different things and all that. At the same time, is then it points out this note here is everybody else should understand that the grihastha is also in a position of superiority because he is supporting everybody else. The whole system is functioning because of that. There's houses to go begging to for the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasis, you know, or from the because they're grihasthas, right? You have this whole setup and all this. You have Gurukul is there. You have the teacher and the student, the brahmin and the student, because it's grihasthas, right? There's no grihasthas and there's no kids, you know. I mean, Brahma had a few without bothering with the whole system, but that was it, you know. It's interesting, just on a side point of that, is how you have the gotras. Because everybody goes back to, you know, Brahma and Krishna. But it's you take the line back to who is the rishi, all the sons of Brahma. When you say what gotra one's in, the gotra means it goes back to that particular son of Brahma. And because they're unborn, he is unborn and they're just coming from his mind and different parts of his body and all this without the normal system. Therefore, then them and their children, they can intermarry and everything like this because they're different gotras, they're different lines. Because they're coming from different mentalities, so their whole subtle and gross body are different, right? Brahma's mentality creates all the different sons. So you don't have the problem where they're brothers, so how can they marry each other's, you know, daughters and stuff like that? Because they're actually different lines. You know, it has to start somewhere. So in the household, it takes his line back to that particular rishi, and that's called the gotra. So that point is that everybody, there's something to respect about someone else. No one sits on their own. This is a very, means if one understands the Vedic principle, one sees that they respect for others and what they can gain is the most important element. So this idea that you have one person that's great and worshipable above everybody else, no one is equal, all this, it's not actually a full understanding, even on the Vedic platform. You know, means generally you'll see that with the Lord in the Vaikuntha platform, but you don't even see that with the devotees, right? Because the Lord comes himself to help the devotees and takes all these funny roles, like with Ramanuja, then Lakshmi Narayan come as a hunter and his wife, you know, which are in a, so they're kind of coming as helping him, serving him like this. So they always, this aspect is there. So the idea where we just see the spiritual master and we just, they're it. Everybody else we don't deal with properly. We don't have to deal with properly because Guru is there and don't you understand and all this. Then means one is not very deep in the understanding of the Vedic knowledge. Not very deep at all. Because here we see that whatever the position, that respect must be there. That respect must be there. That's why it said in the Kali Yuga, everything gets turned upside down. Because the grihasthas don't somehow or another make the money so much. The sannyasis, the brahmachari, they have the money. And then grihasthas then come to take from them and this and that. And it turns upside down because it should be the other way around. no matter how much opulence that the sannyasis, brahmacharis may receive, that's the grihastha